Well, dear students, we have reached our final presentation on taxes, everyone's favorite subject to hate. Did you go over the 1040 form and the Schedule 1 and the Schedule A a few times? Yes, I know. But you'll find, once you do it a few times, it's really not as hard as people make it out to be. And there is help for you. So today we're going to take a look at some information sources, auditing, and then some tax strategies. Let's get started on slide 34. The IRS has several methods of assistance. The best one, of course, is the IRS.gov, which is actually a pretty good website, but it could be better. They have a hotline, which is not as useful as it used to be. It used to be horribly bad. I would call it 3 or 4 times, and if I got the same answer 3 out of 4 times, I figured that's the right answer. But then it was actually very, very good. They would get you to the right person. Sometimes it would take a while. But now they've cut back quite a bit, so it's not available all the time. You can make an appointment and walk in and discuss it with an agent, or they have an email service, which is pretty useful. But we are going to ask you in the assignment to go to IRS.gov and look up some questions. Now, the answers are not as important as the process. We don't want you to be a walking tax encyclopedia. No, we just want you to learn how to find an answer when you need that. One of the best publications is called J.K. Lasser's Your Income Tax, and this is one that's been around for decades. But there's a future for you in the tax preparation. One of the things we found from the last iteration of tax reform, that it never gets easier. It's supposed to. They keep saying, the Congress keeps saying, we're going to simplify it. Wrong. So you'll always have business. And then the Infernal Net. Oof. There are literally thousands of tax-related websites, dear students, but be very careful. Many are not up to date. Somebody creates something and then forgets about it, but it's still there. Or some are just plain wrong. So that's why we ask you to use the IRS.gov website. But realize that they're not perfect either. In fact, there was one high-profile court case where a gentleman used the example that was on the IRS website and in their literature, and the example was wrong. So he took the IRS to court and said, look, I'm just doing what you told me to do. And the judge said, sorry, just because the IRS was wrong doesn't mean you get to break the law. Yes, this is how difficult it is to deal with the tax code. Even the IRS is completely flummoxed at times. So slide number 35, tax preparation software. This is where the future is for many people already and for everyone else. The IRS just assumes that you're going to use some kind of tax preparation software. By far the most popular is TurboTax, and it's actually pretty good. There are others, though, that are gaining market share that are pretty good also. I was not impressed by Tax Act, but that was several years ago. And somebody else said, oh, no, it's okay now. There's H&R Block at Home and then Tax Slayer. What a great name. But this is what the IRS is going to prefer you to use. And for several years, I didn't use them. I used the spreadsheets. I still use my spreadsheets to maintain the tax data and various income and expense categories. But then several years ago, I said, you know what? I better at least see if what I'm doing is right. So I got a very cheap copy of TurboTax, and it turned out, yeah, I was doing it right. And I found that it's actually pretty easy. So what I do is I use my spreadsheets to keep track of all the data throughout the year, and then just type it into TurboTax now. So there's your plug for the day. But again, there are others that are cheaper, that are as good or just as good, or maybe not quite as good. But TurboTax is certainly the gold standard for retail. Now, if you join the VITA, the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, they have their own more professional system that was actually more powerful than TurboTax. As I said, I volunteered 1 year, and you will learn how to use that. So very cool. Slide number 36. If you believe you need help, there's an entire army out there, which you could join, of tax preparers, enrolled agents, accountants, or tax attorneys. Now, in my humble opinion, many tax preparers don't know a whole lot more than what you know already. They learn how to use the software, and then when they get into a situation where they go, well, I don't know what to do this, they ask for help. The individuals who are far more powered are enrolled agents. These are people who have been approved by the IRS. They're usually ex-IRS agents, CPAs, and tax attorneys. Now, I trust the enrolled agent more than I trust CPAs. Now, I'm not trying to denigrate the CPAs, but they're doing tax some of them aren't, but most of them are worried about the business accounting that is their lifeblood. And so the enrolled agent, on the other hand, must know the tax code very, very well. And then, of course, if you need a tax attorney, there's something really serious in your situation. Now, these people are not going to be cheap. The tax preparers are not inexpensive. I think it's a little obscene what they charge. And that's why we have VITA, whatever you call it. It's free for those who qualify, which is, you know, if you're making less than $55,000 or so, that's a pretty good salary. So please do get involved. Either just go there and have your taxes done, and you can talk to them, and they'll show you how they do it, or get involved and learn how to do it. Now, if your professional tax preparer makes a mistake, you are responsible. So that's for this reason, it is important to at least understand the forms you are signing and check that the numbers are reasonable. The IRS has created a registration and testing process for tax preparers. And if you get involved in VITA, you will take that test. It's not that hard. And the VITA folks will prepare you for that test. And you're on your way. Because it used to be that there were very unscrupulous individuals, I'm sure they're still out there, who will say, how much did you pay in taxes last year? $5,000? Wouldn't you like to pay $500 this year? And people say, okay. Here, I'll do your taxes for you. Sign this. But wait a minute, I don't. Just sign it. And then they disappear. You get the picture. That's why we have the registration process. Is that going to help? Maybe a little, but if they're out there, they're out there, and so don't be fooled. Don't get involved. Because my understanding is the IRS, you know, they let you do your time on the weekends, and then you go to work during the week to pay back the IRS. Anyway, slide number 37. Speaking of which, tax audits. Well, now relax, folks. As the IRS has told us, most of these are just because people added when they should have subtracted or whatever. If you claim large or unusual deductions, you're more likely to be audited, certainly, because your taxes are more complicated. It turns out that people who claim the earned income credit are often audited. And these are the people who you really don't need to audit, unless, of course, they're lying about their income. There are three types of audits. The correspondence audit, the office audit, and the field audit. And I wish you would commit these to memory or to at least your notes, because I may ask you a question like this on the exam. But they're in order of complexity. The correspondent audit is the easiest. They send you a letter, official business of the IRS, and I got this once. And it said, excuse me, sir, but here's a document that says you made buku bucks. It was wrong, of course. I did not make that. And I went, excuse me. So I went to the person, the company that had sent that, and said, you guys made a mistake. And they said, yes, we did. So they redid it. They gave me a copy. They sent an IRS a copy, and I filled out everything and sent it back. and they send a letter saying, thank you very much, the issue is closed. The next one is an office audit. They ask you to come into their IRS office, and they ask you to bring this, that, and the other thing. And what do? You bring this, that, and the other thing, and if they ask you any questions, you just say, I don't know, I need to consult my tax professional. Right. Don't try to smooth them. yes, sir. Goodbye, sir. Thank you very much, sir. The third one is the field audit. This is the most complex. The IRS agent visits your home, your business, or your accountant's office. You want to avoid this type, excuse me, at all costs. Some are completely random, but others more likely are done because the IRS smells smoke. Do not try to do this on your own. This is when you need that enrolled agent or CPA. You need somebody, a professional, who is going to deal with the IRS, because the IRS is going to send their bloodhounds. Folks, there's lots of tax. Well, we saw back 7 million people disappeared when they changed one rule. So they know what's going on. They're not stupid. And they're out to catch the bad guys. So if you are targeted for a field audit, you give all your records to the enrolled agent, to the CPA, to the tax attorney, and pay $200 an hour, because that's what it's worth, and they take care of it. You have audit rights, by the way. They can't just say, we're coming tomorrow. No, they have to give you time to prepare for the audit. And again, relax. As long as you don't do anything, I mean, if you made a deduction that's questionable, as long as it was in good faith, you know, it looked good, the worst that's going to happen is they're going to deny it. They're going to have to pay what you did not pay because of that deduction. But if you're hiding income, I can relate a story from my brother-in-law, who is a master carpenter. But he's not very good with his money, and he didn't do anything illegal. He just got in trouble because he got behind and couldn't pay all his taxes. So he went in one day and made a deal with them, and they were very reasonable. But so that, you know, he was not doing anything illegal. However, in this office, which was in New York, he saw a grown man in a 3-piece silk suit crying uncontrollably. Obviously, they had the goods on the guy, and he's going to jail. Slide 38. Speaking of jail, there are two tried and true tax planning strategies: tax evasion and tax avoidance. Which do you think is illegal? Right, you are absolutely right. My apologies here. Excuse me for this. I'm coughing quite a bit. Tax evasion is illegally not paying all the taxes you owe, such as not reporting all income or reporting bogus deductions. And as we said, it goes on, and if you get caught, oh well. And then tax avoidance is totally legitimate. If it's a reasonable deduction, take it. I remember a client of mine who was afraid to do that. She thought she was going to get audited or something. And I said, well, you followed the rules. It's a legitimate a situation. And she was frightened. And I said, oh, well, you know, what are you going to do? You can't live your life. Some people can. But she went ahead and took it, and everything worked out. It was perfectly legitimate. And I'm not an expert by any stretch of imagination. If I thought it was questionable, I would have said, you need to go see an enrolled agent or a CPA or a tax attorney. Americans avoid about $50 billion in taxes. Some reports are it's even higher. By hiding money in offshore accounts, as much as $1.6 trillion in North American wealth is held offshore, according to USA and Today and Forbes. Now, there are higher estimates, but actually, in the last 10 years or so, the United States, along with other countries, but has done quite a bit to ferret out this this phenomenon, because it's not only just the United States United Staters, citizens of the United States that are doing it. So it's a global phenomenon. And countries like Switzerland, where they would just literally not tell you, they would, even if with the proper authorities, gave the banks a document saying, look, you know, we're investigating this individual. Please tell us how much they have in your banks. They wouldn't do it. And the international community said, look, you can't play by these games. It's not the Middle Ages anymore. And eventually Switzerland and other entities have capitulated. Because, you know, if there is legitimate, obviously the state can come down hard on people illegitimately. But if there's legitimate concern that a judge says, yes, signs the warrant, we need to know what's going on, then they should come forward. And they are. So this is still a problem, but we are, as a country and other countries, are doing much to mitigate it. Slide 39. Let's take a look at some stack tax planning strategies. Excuse me. We'll discuss these in more detail as we go along, when we get to investments and retirement. Tax-deferred annuities. No, folks, they're never trust an insurance company with your investments. These have very high fees. Fund your retirement accounts first, which we'll discuss later on. Series EE Treasury Savings Bonds, they make great gifts for newborns. If you use them for higher education, in other words, right now, to pay tuition at Southwestern, you don't pay any taxes. And then, now we're talking. 401ks, 403bs, traditional Roth IRAs, the Roth is better. The educational IRAs, the 529 plans, the Roth is better. KEOs, isn't that a great name? SEP, simple IRAs. These are all phenomenal tax-deferred or tax-free retirement plans that we'll discuss much later on. But they're all very cool, and you need to think about them and get started early. Now, don't run out right now. Relax. You got plenty of time, and we got to get through this semester. And then it turns out that if you invest in businesses through stocks or your own business or real estate, that capital gains taxes are lower than income. And we'll discuss that when we get to investments. Now, the one that has been traditionally the best, if one of the best tax shelters, is owning a home. Well, we've changed it from is to was. Why? Because, again, after the Republican 2017 tax cuts, fewer people can now take advantage of the tax strategy known as owning a home. Why? Because you get to deduct the mortgage loan interest, the property taxes, and this typically will reduce your taxable income. But since they have raised the standard deduction, especially for married couples, and lowered the amount of mortgage interest that you can deduct, this is not as powerful a tool as it used to be. Well, home equity line of credit no longer works. You used to be able to use your equity in your house to get tax-advantaged borrowing, but that's gone now with the new tax bill. Muni bonds are still a good tax-exempt investment, but only for the very wealthy, as we'll learn when we get later on into investments. These really are helpful for folks who are making a lot of money. For us working grunts, they're not bad, you know, don't get me wrong, but you can do a whole lot better with other types of investments. And then starting a business, a real live business, not a hobby. We'll take a look at a quick example later on. But let us now concentrate on the home as a tax planning strategy. Here are two families, a single individual and a married couple, with no home deduction. Both are bringing home $50,000 of adjusted gross income. And so they get a standard deduction each of $12,000 or $24,000, the married couple. The single person's taxable income is $38,000. The married couple's income, taxable income, is $26,000. So we go into the tax table and we find that the single person is paying almost $4,400, right? About a little less than $400 a month in taxes. And the married couple's paying a little over $200 a month in taxes, a little over $2,700 a month. So let's see if we buy a house at the lower end of San Diego's market, a condominium. And this should look familiar on slide 42 because this is very similar to A King Back Schedule A. In fact, it is A King Back Schedule A. And if you own a condominium with a mortgage of about $360,000, you're probably paying $3,900 in property taxes, maybe a little bit more. Your mortgage interest, depending on your interest rate, is about $16,000. You thought I was kidding, didn't you? There's your DMB, property tax, gifts to charity. And so you're able to deduct $22,000 as itemized deductions instead of the standard deduction, right? You get to take the standard deduction or the itemized deductions, but you don't get both. So now let's see what happens to their taxes. The single and married couple are both have $50,000 of adjusted gross income as before, but now instead of the standard deduction, you get the $22,000 of itemized deductions. Well, that has lowered the single person's taxes, taxable income, to $28,000, and now instead of the $4,300, they're paying a little less than $3,173. But the married couple, wait a minute, the married couple should not take the itemized deductions because the standard deduction is $24,000. The standard deduction makes more sense for them. So the condo isn't helping them. It's just not helping them. So we see the savings from the single person are about $100, well, actually perfectly $100 a month. Your utility bill. Whereas the married couple, it doesn't make sense for them to take the itemized deductions because they'd pay more in taxes. For married couples buying at the lower end of the housing market, the Republican tax cuts removed any tax savings. You're better off, or they are, the married couple are better off taking the standard deduction. Don't expect the real estate agents to tell you the truth about this new reality. The real estate agents jump up and down and tell you how much you're just wasting your money, throwing it away by renting. You need a home to take advantage of the tax deductions, but it's just not true anymore. For the people at the low end, married couples at the low end of the housing market here in San Diego, which is the high end in other parts of the country, and so, no good. But what happens when your income now reaches middle class, let's say $80,000, and you've moved into that 22% tax bracket? Is a home still a good tax strategy? Well, let's take a look at the single person. $12,000 standard deduction, $24,000 for the married couple. And the single person is paying almost $11,000 in taxes. The married couple is paying $6,300. Let's see what happens if we buy a house in the nicer areas of San Diego. And so we're looking at a mortgage of $720,000. Remember, once the mortgage reaches $750,000, any interest above that is no longer tax deductible. So, if you have a house in the hoity section, the very higher section, you're kind of screwed. Anything over $750,000, that interest is no longer deductible. But this couple, this single person, his mortgage is $720,000. They're paying $32,000 at 4.5% interest. They pay more in state income taxes. They pay property taxes $7,600. And $400 for property taxes. And notice that these state and local taxes are limited to $10,000. So this couple, or the single person, is paying that $10,000. Anything above that, they can no longer deduct. Yeah, it hit the high tax states hard. And then they earn more, so they pay more to charity. And we're looking at total itemized deductions of $44,000. Is that going to help us? Slide 47. Well, it turns out it helps the single person quite a bit. By removing $44,000 of itemized deductions, their taxable income has dropped to $36,000. And likewise for the married couple. And so this has, in this case, $4,000, in this case, $4,000, helped these individuals somewhat, quite a bit, actually. Because look at the tax savings for the single person. Almost $7,000, you know, a little less than $600 a month. But the married couple, you know, $200 a month is nothing to sneeze at, but it's not what, you know, the real estate agents jump up and down and scream and holler. Once your income reaches the middle to upper middle level, class level, a home is normally a very good tax shelter. But, however, be mindful of the limits imposed by the new Republican tax cuts. The Republicans wanted to punish California and New York, and they did, right? People took notice. The Republicans thought this was going to be a winning issue for them, and it turns out it was a disaster. Please don't kill the messenger. The results speak for themselves. The voters in high tax states proceeded to decimate what few Republicans were left. Orange County, that bastion of Republican conservatism for decades, no longer has any Republican representatives. So, again, I apologize if the politics are not to your liking, but we're reporting what's happening, dear students. And I'm not happy about this. People think I'm gloating. Maybe I'm not. We need two-party system. At the very least, some other countries have more than one party, more than two parties. But if the Republicans keep doing what they're doing, they're going to alienate, you know, vast sections of the country, as the Democrats did alienate vast sections of the country with their support of same-sex marriages. Here, the Republicans are doing the same thing with their attacks on the economics. And boy, if you hit people in their wallet, boy, don't they vote against you. So hopefully things will get... I don't know. I don't... You tell me what's going to happen. By the way, I'm a Democrat with a small D and a Republican with a small R. So in case you were wondering how that works out, I believe both parties have very good ideas and both parties have pretty ridiculous ideas. But what's happened with the Republican Party lately is pretty darn scary. Slide 49. Remember the $299 stereo that cost us $509.74? Well, if it is a legitimate business expense, meaning that you can use it for your business, then that same $299 stereo cost us just $314.15. Because if you're the end user, if you're using it for your business and not turning around and selling it, you still have to pay the state sales tax, but that's a deductible business expense. So when could a stereo be a legitimate business expense? You have to ask yourself. Well, think about it. If you're have a storefront or an office and you need a stereo for that office or storefront, that's a legitimate business expense. If you're a DJ, that's a legitimate business expense. I remember one gentleman who, I'm not sure if he's still here, but I had the great pleasure and opportunity to see his backyard menagerie of turtles in Chula Vista. He had all kinds of turtles. He even had a Galapagos turtle, and it was all legit. He was in the business of buying and selling turtles, and he raised the turtles. He spent, I think it was $400 a month just on lighting and keeping these things warm. Because, you know, the Galapagos turtle is a tropical animal. And it was all legitimate business expense. He had a huge garage out back that housed all these turtles, and that, you know, if the IRS ever came a call on, he'd say, look, you know, here are the receipts, here are the, you know, here's what I spent, and here's what I made from selling these turtles. And so, yeah, no problem. I remember another wonderful example that I'll have a few minutes here, hope you don't mind, of my niece and her business partner, who had a theater production company. And that's essentially a partnership. If you're in business with somebody other than your spouse, automatically, if you don't do anything else, the IRS considers you a partnership. So Yobo here, your humble, wound up doing their taxes, and they're not easy, folks. That partnership return is not easy, folks. I haven't done it in a while, but it's 1065, Form 1065. And sure enough, at first they were making money. They had some productions that they used the bare bones to do their productions. And they made money. And then, of course, they started adding more doodads and got some critical responses saying, you know, you really need to, this is a great start, but it's not up to the same professional standards that we expect, the critics love to say. And so they started spending more money on costumes and on sets and actors, and then they started losing money. the plays were still great, but they started losing money. And they did this for a few years, and I said, you know, niece, if you're in business, you can't just continue to lose money, because then the IRS will say it's not a business, will say it's a hobby. You have to turn a profit after so many years, or else they're going to deny the business. And she said, well, what should we do? I said, let me contact the IRS. And I used their telephone, and it took me a while to get to the right person. They said, well, I don't know who to talk to. We'll get back to you. And I finally found the right person, and I'm speaking to this gentleman about the situation, and he says, well, what kind of business is it anyway? I said, well, it's a theater production company. And he roared with laughter. He just, you go right ahead and keep losing as much money as you want. In other words, the IRS is used to theater production companies never making a dime. And after I reported this back to my niece, she kind of looked at me and said, I don't know if I want to keep doing this if we're going to continue to lose money. So eventually they did fold the backyard productions. And now it's being reborn as Backyard Renaissance. So we'll see if they can turn a profit this time. So if it's a legitimate business, then you get to take advantage of the business expenses. But if it's your hobby, then the IRS is going to say you can't continue to lose money. No, it's not going to work. Unless you're in a theater production company, and then go right ahead and lose as much money as you want. Slide number 50. Donate your car. Get a tax break. An all too familiar spiel we hear from charities these days is you can donate your car and get a $2,500 tax break. Well, if you're in the 22% tax bracket, that's worth $550. And you might only get $50 in cash if you ask the recycling yard to come and get it. Not a bad deal, eh? Well, no more. No. IRS closed that loophole. The charity must now sell the car immediately and tell you the actual amount they received for your car. So you're not going to get that $2,500, unless the car's worth that much, right? If you don't itemize deductions, instead take the standard deduction, well, then you can't take advantage of the deduction anyway, right? So you go to your tax person and say, look, I got a $2,500 receipt that says that I donated my car. And they say, well, do you own a home? Do you have any other deductions? And you say, well, you know, I paid my a DMV fee, that's about $70, and they say your standard deduction is better, right? You shouldn't take these itemized deductions because you'll pay more in taxes. So then they run back to Father Joe's village or KPBS, and you told me I was going to be able to donate my car and get a tax break. And they say, look at the fine print. It says consult your tax professional. You may be able to get a tax break. I'm not saying you shouldn't donate your car or other items of value or money to charities. No. It's just that you might not be able to lower your taxes. So be aware. And then finally, oh my goodness, we're finally done with taxes, the bottom line. As Mr. Franklin said, Dr. Franklin, many years ago, death and taxes. What's the only two things that we know are certain in this life? Well, he was actually wrong. We know that there is going to be death, tax, and tax law changes. So pay your taxes, quit complaining. Well, go ahead, complain. You know, it might make you feel a little bit better. But if you have a legitimate beef, which everyone does, write your erected representative and tell them that you're tired of this. A lot of good it'll do you. Don't hold your breath, because everyone, again, agrees that the tax law is broken, but nobody can agree on how to fix it. And the last go-around was not a fix, in my humble opinion, except if you're really, really wealthy, then. If we want real tax reform, all we really have to do is to require the senators and representatives in Congress to do their own taxes. You see, one of the perks of being a representative or a senator is that you don't do your own taxes. The General Accounting Office sends people up to Capitol Hill and does their taxes for you. So what do you care how damn complicated it is? Instead, use this insanity as a springboard for your career. Become a tax preparer, a CPA, enrolled agent, and you'll be guaranteed lifetime employment. Yeah, please don't shoot the messenger. Our tax system is insane, but it's the reality. Now, go back over, do the 1040 form a couple of times, do the second tax exercise, do your assignment, and then get involved in VITA, and who knows where it might lead. And finally, we're done with taxes, dear students. See ya.